This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by Harry's. For guys like you that want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code FILMSACK when you check out. That's Harry's, H-A-R-R-Y-S.com, and the checkout code FILMSACK. And by patreon.com/frogpants. A great way to support FilmSack and other shows on the Frog Pants Network. You know you want to. It's easy, it's quick, and it's painless. Go to patreon.com/frogpants.
What we have found locked in these ice cores is evidence of a cataclysmic climate shift which occurred around 10,000 years ago. The concentration of these natural greenhouse gases in the ice cores indicates that runaway warming pushed the planet into an ice age which lasted 2 centuries.
I'm confused. I thought you were talking about global warming, not an ice age.
Yes, it is a paradox, but global warming can trigger a cooling trend.
The whole damn shelf is breaking off. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack episode 219, and we are mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson. I'm joined tonight by Brian. Don't let Jason operate the drill, Dunaway.
Me. Hey, you know everybody, right? Hey, you know how everybody is always talking about the weather? Well, I got a script delivered 2 hours, but nothing but weather talk. Riveting. Also, my main character is a paleoclimatologist. Yeah, that's the thing. Oh, and he's divorced. Bing. Now give me my money. I'm rolling. Emma Rich.
Wow. All right. Also with us, Randy, that phone call is going to only get harder the longer you stand there, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. And I'll ask you to just back off with the questioning of what I'm doing here. Of course, I'm qualified to be doing a greeting on a podcast. For your information, I'm the president of the Frog Pants Spelling Bee team, the driver in the Frog Pants four-person bobsled, the founder and chairman of the board of the Fishing Fly Tying Club, the award-winning Fishing Fly Tying Club, Brian Ibbett. Don't you give me that look. I'm the vice president of the Beef Jerky Tasting Team, the president emeritus of the Frog Pants Iomega Zip Disc Aficionado Society, and the Frog Pants Boy Scout Troop Scribe. I think I can deliver a greeting.
Think you can fix that radio while you're at it?
You're the most qualified nerd here, or whatever that kid said. I forgot.
Right.
Finally with us, Brian. He burned all the tax law books, Ibbett.
Fully worked.
Oh my God, look over there. Two tornadoes are joining together. Holy cow. And because of limitations of airspeed and laws of physics, the two tornadoes have basically merged into a tornado the same size and power of just one of the tornadoes. So that's good.
Right.
Look out for the billboard,
buddy.
Didn't
we just see that in Sharknado? Didn't we just see that entire LA scene in Sharknado?
From now on, all we're covering are movies where Sharknados attack Los Angeles.
Yeah. Right?
That's it.
Yeah.
That's right. And no, do stuff to the Hollywood sign. At least, you must do something to the Hollywood sign.
Of course. And at least this one, at least this one had kind of, well, let's call it special effects that worked. I mean, at least they looked good.
They look good.
It looked a lot better than Sharknado did, dude. That thing was terrible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But some of the same things kind of came up, and it kind of bugged me because when we just talked about doing this movie in the first place, and by the way, big thanks to Bernie Walter who sent us these DVDs.
Thanks a lot, Bernie.
Yeah, thanks, dude. Yeah. It is still my favorite of the Emmerich movies.
Full screen edition. Thanks a lot. Right.
It's still my favorite of the Emmerich movies, but some of it's like goofy. It's real goofy, you know? I remember in 04 thinking, this is great. This is so much better than 94 or, you know, any of these other dumb movies they made. But I really like this one. And now I'm not sure it held up as well as I thought it did.
Did you show up at 2012 when it came out in 2009?
I did. I saw that in theaters. Was it? No, it wasn't 20. That was 2010, wasn't it?
No, it was 2009.
Really?
Yeah.
It feels like ages ago.
Yeah.
Or well, the confusion less, might I guess be because they call it 2012, right?
All right. I get it.
Ice ages ago.
Are you sure? Wait, that just doesn't sound right. Is that right?
According to IMDb, 2000,
you're totally right.
Yeah.
What the hell? Anyway.
And this movie we just watched is 10 years old, feels like 50.
Okay. The script,
it
maybe.
It does feel like 90s. It feels like a 90s.
It does feel like 90s.
Sure. Right. Script-wise, I will agree with you. Acting-wise, I totally agree with you. But like actual, like how it looks and feels, it feels still pretty current to me. Like it,
how young
it looks
was
hard.
That? How young was that Jake Gyllenhaal? Was he not just a youngster?
The only way I can tell time with him is having him next to his sister. And then I go, all right, now first I say, who's that weird man he's with? And then second I go, oh yeah, that's Batman's girlfriend. Got it. All right.
She is a lovely woman.
She's fine. I actually really like her as an actress. I think she's fine. She just looks like,
here's an actress.
She's kind of a dude.
I just want to justify calling this movie old. It feels so old. And the reason for that is because Emmerich made the decision to use as little technology as possible, which was good because that's what ages movies. But unfortunately, this movie came out a millisecond before smartphones.
Yeah.
And the whole movie, you're just like, gosh, this feels like ancient. Like, they're in a library and there's no internet? What? Like, seriously?
That stuff's pretty weird.
But it kind of, I was thinking the same thing too. And good luck trying to find a payphone now. I mean, they're all been turned into wireless hotspots or something. Anyway,
or charge stations,
right? So,
but like early on in the film, Dennis Quaid and Ian Holm are scientists working in the same narrow field, and they're both like 50 years old, meeting for the first time at a conference. Not since the internet, you don't.
No, that's true. Like, I hadn't thought of it that way. It's not so much how they're communicating throughout the film. It's these relationships would be different had they had ways of hooking up. I mean, this is 2004, so it's not that old, but it's old enough to pre-smartphone. That's like what, 3 years away, really. I mean, if you're not counting that weird trio deal. Brian, you still have your trio, don't you?
I still have my trio. Well, I have a fake trio that.
It's the
ones that they have in the stores. Exactly.
Still paying Sprint $80 a month to service that thing.
I am. It's a brick. It literally is a brick.
Best version of Snake they ever made, though, on that thing.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, there's definitely that feeling of almost like technology-less world, especially for a bunch of scientists who would definitely rely on a lot of technology. But even the guys up in the International Space Station, I felt like they were just floating around on some rickety old erector sets.
Right. Well, and they really didn't show any sort of knowledge or experience.
Right. Yeah, there was no knowledge.
Look at
that.
They're clouds.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, it's clear.
That was so embarrassing. They just sat around. I don't even know what they were doing. They weren't like reading books or nothing. They were just sitting there staring at their feet. And all of a sudden they go, oh, look at the clouds float over here.
There's something about that I'm a huge fan of, which I'm going to explain in a second. But first, I'm going to let Scott Fletcher explain the core of the movie, which some people at home may not have heard about this movie before. I don't know. It's only the highest grossing non-number one weekend opener of all time. More about that in a minute. So here's Fletcher's explanation.
The day after the day after tomorrow.
Where's he going?
The day after tomorrow. After years of unabated global warming, the greenhouse effect is wreaking havoc all over the globe in the form of catastrophic hurricanes, tornadoes, tidal waves, floods, and most ominously, the beginning of the next ice age. Paleoclimatologist Jack Hall, played by Dennis Quaid, tries to save the world while also shepherding to safety his son Sam, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, who was in New York when the city was overwhelmed by the beginnings of the new big freeze.
Wow.
That was super long.
Yeah.
I loved it.
I think that was one of the best reads. I mean, he was maybe not the funniest read, but boy, yeah. I mean, just like the most intense deliveries I think we've ever heard.
Hey, Fletcher, keep getting up at like 4 a.m. to do your readings. I think that's a great idea.
And make sure you close the door as you do it.
Is that what he was doing?
Using that bathroom reverb.
I love that he left all that in. I think that's awesome.
Totally.
So the movie came out in 2004, and some weird things happened in it, and it holds up in so many ways, and in a lot of other ways, I don't think it does. And director Roland Emmerich is no stranger to these kinds of movies. Him and his brother are famous for writing, directing, and producing modern disaster films. They're kind of their thing, and I feel like the first real attempt at it, or the big box office, like, hey, everybody, you have to all go at midnight and see this thing, was probably Independence Day, which we've done on the show. And then a whole bunch of other ones that range from really bad to this, which I think is my favorite of all of them. So so it's easy for me to actually still say this. I think it's not, it didn't hold up very well as much as I had hoped in the last 10 years. It'd be 10 years old now, in fact. But I feel like it is still the best of the movies they've made.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, when you compare it to stuff like 2012, Godzilla.
Yeah.
This is the old Godzilla, folks.
Yeah.
You brought it, Godzilla.
This is better than Independence Day by far. And Stargate. Yes.
By far. Oh, my gosh. Oh, by far. Yeah. Even Stargate. Now, don't get me wrong. Stargate is one of my favorite concepts of all time. And its first 20 minutes is brilliant. Really well done, that part of that movie. Then it all goes to shit after that. When they get to Egypt, everything goes straight to poop in that movie. And I hate that movie because of it. So they had this great start and then blew it. Mm-hmm. I love the show. All that stuff that came later is great. But that movie sucked. Independence Day, I've said the time we watched it, and I still stand by it, is just, I think it's one of the most overhyped events in all movie history.
Mm.
And 2012 mm-hmm. felt the same to me. And that 10,000 BC piece of garbage,
that was awesome.
Really bad. And the Godzilla thing, other than Hank Azaria as a cameraman, was terrible.
I agree.
So,
but The Patriot was better than this. I liked Independence Day more than this. This movie just, my gosh, it's such a thin little veneer on top of a political statement. Like,
right.
And it never seeks to be more than that. Yeah. Like you never get this sense that somebody went, oh, let's write a good character. Let's put a good relationship in here. You know,
yeah. Right.
No, let's just fill it with a bunch of tropes and see what happens.
Well, so I have a theory about that, because this was 2004. And I agree with you that it's kind of a thinly veiled political statement that's not got a very good script to back itself up. And regardless of which side of that political argument you land on, I think it's kind of grown worthy either way.
You're going to get some hate for that.
Well,
it's not
either
a political
way.
Thing. It's a fact, Scott. It's a fact. It's a fact. It's
they
a
can
fact.
Do that all they want. But my point is, in 2004, I feel like that was maybe like Al Gore's prime time for when he was harping the most on this, because
right.
he had just lost an election 4 years previous in you know, some weird ways in Florida, and all that stuff went down. And then he went like into hiding and grew a huge beard for a while. And then he came out and he started doing like the
I've
whole,
been in the woods and well, I got stuff to say.
An Inconvenient Truth came out 2 years after this.
Right. Correct. So, wasn't there a lot of talk leading up to that though?
There was. There were a lot of things like presentations and things he was giving for that movie that were getting recorded for his movie. So yeah, it would have all been right around this time.
Like a TED talk and a whatever.
And yeah. This movie has the least disguised real person I've ever seen. Like, this is like, we're not going to say the name Dick Cheney.
Oh, dude. Totally.
But other than that, we're going to make him look like Dick Cheney, sound like Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, the director's cut, he shoots a guy in the face.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, make sure in the script we make Dick Cheney apologize. He better apologize at some point.
From the Mexican consulate. He's going to apologize.
Oh, that's right. He was down in Mexico.
Yeah.
By then, I was kind of like, all right, you guys, you're sewing this up too neatly, and I wasn't paying attention to the details. But yeah, we were going to Mexico. When things go south, we're literally going south.
You know, I thought this was I will distinguish this movie by rating it by sphincter tightness. And I tell you, this one, I sphincter tightened more on this movie than I did any other ID4s or 2012 or whatever it was. Because for some reason, even though we know that a lot of the science of this is ridiculous, I think they really sell the fact that we just are not prepared and we just don't know. And it moves so much faster than we could have predicted. And I kind of like that.
Well, I do. Right. I like the urgency as well, but the science of the day and today have completely debunked this movie as being, there's no way you'd have like 3 days of this.
Right, right.
And then the hellscape begins. It's a slow, horrible process.
I'm with my partner, Brian Dunaway. When you get attacked by aliens, you're like, okay, this doesn't look anything like my reality. Mm. Whereas when you watch this movie, there's a freaking tidal wave sweeping Manhattan. Like, it's pretty good and real. It's going very slow, but you know, you can kind of find yourself getting nervous.
I agree with that. Yeah. Actually, that's what I think I like about it, is that there's something in it is rooted in reality, or at least they're depicting things that feel like they could happen, regardless of the science behind it or the thin script to help propel it. Mm-hmm. It still feels like, man, New York covered in snow and center of the storm below, you know, perfect zero, whatever the hell that cold is. Yeah, that stuff seems real and scary and scary and real.
The descending stuff, like you're watching the buildings as the cold is descending slowly down, and like that seems a little. That was the only part of it where I was like, okay, that's kind of hokey.
The only part?
That was the part that I felt like was most egregious of it. Yeah, I mean, I thought it's all, you know, it's all suspend disbelief kind of thing.
Right,
but,
The helicopter one looked cool. Yeah. The helicopter scene, they did the same thing. It was kind of, I thought it was kind of cool. I know it was ridiculous that he would step out and he would immediately freeze like that. I know that's impossible, whatever. But I did like how they played it out. The buildings and the glass breaking and all that stuff and them running looks stupid.
But if you could suddenly increase the decrease the temperature that vastly and that quickly,
right?
That's basically what would happen. I mean, maybe better effects or something, but it would, it would be like this. I don't know that it would creep up as if it had an edge to it. You know what I mean? Like when they were getting back to the library, that was a little hard to take.
And they're getting chased by a wall of coal. Right. That's just right behind them.
Yeah, that seems crazy. Shut the door on it. They just go.
I've been in like a weather pattern before where it was warm 1 second and then literally a second later, a certain breeze hit and it was suddenly super cold. And you're like, whoa, how did that change so quickly? Now it's obviously nothing like this, but it didn't strike me as that crazy. I mean, to me, it was just the speeding up of everything was really the only thing I had to kind of suspend my disbelief on.
I immediately went to the internet and went, okay, well, how cold are we talking about here? I mean, if you just all of a sudden you were on Earth and they just suddenly threw you into space with no protection at all, would it be that cold? And so I instantly, my logical mind wanted to search the internet. And
Did you find anything? What'd you find?
I basically got really bored reading all there.
Yeah. I went and looked it up too, because my big question was, well, you know, the Earth has a certain amount of heat right now.
Yeah.
Right.
And where does it go to justify this kind of portrayal? Like I mean, it's got to go somewhere, right? You can't just remove heat to nowhere. And then I found myself reading all about global warming.
Right.
What's funny is if you look at the IMDb page you go to trivia and then you go to goofs, and you would think that this movie would be filled with, you know, the laws of physics are broken here. No, I mean, the stuff you're finding is, well, people would be sitting down or standing up when the president leaves the room because that's what you're supposed to do. And this, I'm not kidding, a high school competitive team for Virginia is sent to New York without a chaperone. That's a goof.
Yeah, nice goof. Yeah, it's like, why even have lists of goofs in a movie where the entire premise is a goof in a way?
When the scientist is watching the soccer game, he repeatedly exhorts his team to kick it. A soccer fan would never, ever say this. Kicking the ball is about the only thing an outfield soccer player can do, so it's totally redundant.
I blame IMDb.
Thank you for those goofs, people.
That
entire list was written one day when Reddit went down.
Right.
A bunch of writers, you know, internet denizens had nothing to write.
And I should have done the whole thing in the comic book guy voice. Well, a soccer fan would never tell his team to kick the ball.
Well, here's an interesting story. So I'll just share this with you because this is what I looked up and found in a town called Spearfish, South Dakota. Mm. Of course, it's one of the Dakotas, don't you know?
Sure.
So imagine this is how the article goes. Imagine, and this is on weather.com, so I assume they know. I don't know. Whatever. Imagine bundling up to get the newspaper on an early morning at 7:30 a.m. with the temperature at a frigid -4 degrees Fahrenheit. Just 2 minutes later, as you're letting Fido out to take a potty break on the lawn, you notice the frigid air you walked out into the door is not so frigid anymore. You look at your thermometer, and it has shot up 45 degrees. That's right, a temperature increase of 49 degrees in just 2 minutes. Now that's an increase, which you would welcome,
right?
Sure, but it shows that temperature can change that
quickly, yeah,
that dramatically.
27 minutes later, drop down to -4 again.
Right,
weird things have happened. But the idea that it would go from we're kind of everyone's alive and we're fine to there's literally a wall, you can't see it, but the reason we know it's there is it's creeping along like, you know, Zerg creep on the ground, and it kills you the second it touches you. That seems a little out there to me. But then again, I mean, look.
But I like it. It is what's scarier than, you know, I mean, this actually worked. The other time nature attacked us with Wahlberg, it didn't work. I never believed it. But what was that? The happening?
I think it's the trees.
I think the plants are alive. I think they're thinking.
But, you know, but global warming is a very serious topic. And it's, I don't know, did it? Do you think it pushed anybody to be more serious about global warming at all?
Do you think we just kind of
went?
Movies, whatever. Movies reflect, sometimes they reflect social stuff that's going on, but I don't know that this movie had that kind of impact.
Especially because the only thing these people really could have done differently is evacuated sooner. Yeah. That's really the only, they could not have stemmed the tide. They could not have changed things. They could not have, if only we wouldn't have flown that helicopter into the eye of the thing.
And that's shark bait in there. And that's where it goes to your goof, dude, because there was earlier in the movie where they said, they were at the hearing, right? And so you got the normal Quaid, the sane Quaid up there telling them what they should do. And then later, they said, well, sorry, Mr. Vice President, Cheney-looking guy. You can't change it now, but you could have back when we were talking to you at that meeting. No.
What?
No. No. Yeah. No, you could have maybe just evacuated people a little sooner, but that's about all you could have done.
Right. I, one of the things that I love also when he was having one of the meetings later, Dennis Quaid, was he was talking to him the second time, the I told you meeting, where he gets to go in and tell everybody he told him so. And then before he leaves, he pulls the old, almost like dropping the mic on the floor after he leaves, he just walks by the map and goes, everything below here. See you, suckers.
Yeah. Exactly. I got a train to catch.
Mic drop. I
like it. And it was kind of random. Like it wasn't totally random. It wasn't super. Yeah. It's like I couldn't tell. In fact, he cut right through the middle of Utah. And I'm like, all right, well, can people in Kanab stay home? And can everybody 2 miles up the road leave?
Most random line drawing ever of the most specific thing. Everything below this. Yeah. Well, you just kind of whooshed it.
Yeah. By the way, Canada.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, all you Canadians and everybody else, presumably. I mean, when they showed the final shot with the Earth up there, and they're going,
the Earth up there.
I've never seen such clear skies.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking, I've also never seen such a giant block of ice cover everybody and kill everyone. That's what you're thinking?
Have they not been, like, getting reports from NASA about any of this stuff going on? Are they like, look, Marmaduke is funny today?
Oh, but that reminds me. So I'm a fan of. Bad shit is going down on the Earth, and there are two dudes in a space station who can't do anything about it, but they're observing it for us. You see this in fact, it's borderline trope, so I'll just play it.
Musgrove.
Whoops, sorry. It's like this thing where it's in Armageddon, it was Peter Stormare and that other guy.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And they're usually a little bit crazy, although in this one they were just kind of normal, but sometimes they're kind of stir crazy and a little bit nuts. And sometimes the space station gets destroyed somehow because why not? And I love that. I think that's a great thing. I think it's super dumb, but I look forward to it. And as soon as I saw those guys in this, I went, oh, they're going to view everything from up here.
It's going to be totally cool for them.
And didn't they? Wasn't there something else more recent than that where
Gravity?
It may have been Gravity. But who was up in Gravity that was watching all that? No, it wasn't Gravity.
Nothing happened. Everything was bad happened up there. It didn't happen.
Exactly. Well, all the good stuff.
Right. All the good stuff was happening up there.
There was some other movie, though, that I saw recently where this trope was in full force and they had dudes up there. And I swear it was with you guys. I saw it. Man, I don't know. I don't remember now. But anyway,
what about the beginning of the most recent Call of Duty game?
Oh, did same deal. Yeah. No, the offshoot one that's every other year, the more storied one. Anyway, yes, they have a whole
Black Ops or
Black Ops 2, isn't it?
It starts with you in space, and everything starts going wrong, and you have to get a gun and fly around.
Is that? I've seen the previews of this. I haven't played the game, but like you're flying towards space flying in from towards Earth from space on like a girder of a space station piece or something.
That's not the one that's not out yet, is it? Maybe it is.
I don't know. I'm talking about the most recent game that came out 11 months ago.
Oh, then that's Modern Warfare 3. Yeah. That's what that is. Yeah.
nobody keeps track.
Yeah, who's keeping track?
Ghosts. Yeah. Call of Duty Ghosts.
Oh, Ghosts, right.
Yes.
That's when they changed the name. Got it. It should have been 3, or it should have been whatever 4, or whatever the next one should have been, and they called it Ghosts because that's dumb. But anyway, I guess the guy who did start in space. And that would be, like, if you were telling me a science fiction tale, like the new one's supposed to be, I might buy into that.
Sit down.
Yeah, but since it's, like, supposed to still be, like, now, and a guy rides a girder safely to Earth. That's really dumb.
Right.
That's super dumb.
Well, terminal velocity is only so fast. I mean, you can go so.
It's not really that terminal.
It's not that. It's just velocirous.
I mean, once you get to a certain height, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So I was going to mention this before we get too far. Do you guys like the? I'm a big fan of movie logo treatment, where the logo is directly tied into the story. So in this one, it's 20th Century Fox getting all stormy, But the best one ever, and they do a lot of cool stuff with Paramount. They're always got something going on with the mountain. Right,
especially with the Indiana Jones stuff.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Connecting.
Right. Remember that? Remember that time Minority Report did the water at the beginning of theirs?
Yeah, anyway. The water, mm-hmm. right. That's some right. symbol I heard. At some right. crazy weird podcast had these idiots talking about water and the symbology. It was crazy.
Well, the Waterworld symbology. Does it too, right?
But Waterworld is easily my favorite.
I was going to ask you if that was your favorite.
Because that's the Universal logo. Big Universal words come around the front. And then the camera zooms toward the planet, and all of the land masses that are normally on the logo all start to get covered up by water until there's nothing there. And then it zooms all the way down into the logo planet until you are on top of freaking what's his name ship before he pees on the plant and drinks it.
Love it.
It's awesome. Well, hello, everybody, and take a minute to talk to me, won't you? Just for a second. Let's talk about Harry's.com. Harry's.com sponsoring today's program. That's right. Harry's.com. Let me tell you about our friends over there. They've fixed a problem most of us have, and we're not even thinking much about it. And we should, because we could save a bunch of money if we just knew what a problem this was. We don't want to pay so much for overpriced razors anymore, do we? Do we? I mean, let's admit it. Shaving with a dull blade isn't fun. Sometimes we scrape and cut ourselves with dull blades. Razors are expensive. They run about $4 a blade these days. So a guy who shaves every day spends hundreds of dollars a year on razors. If you got a Gillette Fusion, for example, you know how expensive it is to feed that thing full of blades? It's ridiculous. You go to the store to buy them. Sometimes you have to talk to the dude and say, dude, come over and open up the plexiglass cabinet. It's a huge pain. Blade shouldn't be that hard to get or that expensive. So here's a company that fixes all of that. It's Harry's, H-A-R-R-Y-S.com. High quality razors for about half the price of those big brand blades. They make their razors in their own factory in Germany. German razors with the German engineering. For sharpness, high performance, no more dull blades that just suck. They ship everything to you for free because they make and ship their own blades. They're just a more efficient company. And you get the factory direct pricing you deserve. They guarantee your satisfaction. I got the Winston set. Love it. It's awesome. You get something like that or whatever, man. It'll come straight to your door. You're not going to pay shipping for that. If you get the starter Truman set, it's an amazing deal. $15 is all. That's nothing. I've been using them for a while now. So should you. You want a clean, close, comfortable shave without spending your life savings? Dang it, man. No better time. Go to Harry's.com, H-A-R-R-Y-S.com, and get $5 off your first purchase with a coupon code FILMSACK. That's Harry's.com and enter the coupon code FILMSACK at checkout. You'll be glad you did. That's Harry's.com and the code FILMSACK.
This is something that a lot of studios have pushed back against, right? And eventually that filmmakers just decided we're just going to do it and you're going to have to forgive us. So it's a pretty recent thing. There's a lot of like really awesome recent uses of the Universal Studios logo. My favorite was in the original Battlestar Galactica, The Plan. You know, the Ronald D. Moore's like first...
miniseries like the first, thing.
Right. When you see the Universal logo, the Earth behind it is actually Caprica. Look close.
Oh, weird.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Freaking cool.
Oh, so the world itself... No, I was thinking there was a world behind the world. You mean the actual world in use there is Caprica, not Earth.
Yeah. Yeah, the planet that's going on behind the Universal text.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that should have been some kind of spoiler ahead of the time for people, right? I mean, if they knew what they were looking at, it'd be like, oh, wait, that's not Earth. Well, maybe not. I don't remember how that all started. I don't remember how that miniseries kind of went.
There was Cylons, and there was a meeting in space.
Wasn't there a lot of sex with a lady in a red dress or something?
Yeah, right. Yeah, she's like a glowing back on her stuff. Right.
I loved the Universal logo at the beginning of Scott Pilgrim versus the World because it was an old school video game.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
That one's good.
I just found a site with a few of these. I'd forgotten about the Flintstones. Well, of course, who remembers the Flintstones movies? But they changed the name to Universe Shell, and they showed Pangea as opposed to all the different continents.
Oh, they showed just a huge supercontinent.
Just one supercontinent. Yeah,
that's cool. That's cool. I like that.
Gladiator changes it all to gold.
Yeah, those bastards. Mm-hmm. The Matrix ones are easy because they're all Matrixy looking.
But you remember sitting in the movie theater waiting for the Matrix to start? And you saw that Warner Brothers logo, and it was so confusing and exciting.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Let me tell you how I remember it. I remember being late because I had to get popcorn for my kids.
So you didn't you didn't start with the Warner Brothers logo. You missed it.
I missed it.
I was watching The Sopranos the other day, and Joey Pantalone's in there. Pantalone, whatever the hell he says.
Joey Pants.
Right. Joey Pants. And he's a jerk, and he's whatever. But when I watch him in these movies or other TV shows, I cannot not think of him with a goatee, sitting with Agent Smith, eating a steak, and being glad he knows it's not real, but he doesn't care.
This is the most delicious steak, even though my mind
knows. Says it's not, but I know it doesn't matter.
And those
Pants.
Two Utes over there.
Anyway, I think that's a real trip. Here's your here's a trope. Vice presidents and senators are always evil, and there's always at least one who props out early as like the guy who's not going to believe anybody. And this guy was so obviously Dick Cheney that it was almost painful. But I would also like to point out he has the best IMDb photo of the film. If you go look him up, he looks rad.
Can I give you the counter trope to that?
Kenneth Walsh. Yeah, let me give you a counter trope sound. I don't think I... Here we go.
Hold, sinners!
All right, go ahead.
Scientists are badasses.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the best trope. It's like, when did that start? Was that Indiana Jones? Did he start that bad-ass scientist? You know, guy kind of, yeah, okay. I want to make sure.
Except you know what? For the scientists.
Yeah.
And this is another counter trope to your counter trope.
Oh, you got another one? Well, then we have to go back. All right.
The scientists that ignore the early warning and say, oh, that's probably just a malfunction. Let's get back to what we're doing.
Yeah. Oh, don't listen to Frodo. He doesn't know what he's saying.
Don't you know in the real world, science is so well funded that we have dudes sitting around just monitoring in real time, monitoring what's going on?
Yes.
I meant Bilbo, not Frodo. What was I going to say about, this guy, Kenneth Welsh? He doesn't look a thing. He looks like a tree hugging hippie. He doesn't look anything like.
I hope so. This is supposed to be targeted towards the tree hugger, isn't it?
Yeah. It's also Canadian, which I don't know what that means, but there it is. There it is.
And then the follow on to that is my favorite trope in the film. I have to put it out right now. Give me a triple it.
Go.
Well, gents, looks like this is the end. Let's all have ourselves a dram and go out like men.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Somebody get the band. We got to play.
Did that not make your testicles swell? It was like the most...
Oh, mine shrunk. I feel like manly. I did this wrong. Mine shrunk up and sucked it back into my body. Yeah.
The most manly thing. What are you going to do with that scotch? And of course, no one who has ever been around scotch was even involved in the making of this film. We shouldn't waste that. It's 12 whole years old.
everybody in this movie had a bad case of the, I'm just going to quit right here. Mm. Yeah. I'm not even going to try.
Save yourself.
It's like, oh, we got the cancer patient. I'll stay here and die. You guys go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's also that's a Emmerich thing. He does this in every one of these movies. In fact, all these characters, you could probably just find their equivalents on some chart with all his films and then just say, all right, well, so-and-so matches so-and-so and so on.
You really do get the feeling that he did some research, like, he decided to look up what's the biggest whatever and then double it. Like, what's the biggest hail that could possibly fall on Earth? We'll make our hail twice that size.
Yeah.
What's really the most number of tornadoes that could be in one city block? We'll double it, you know, like that sort of thing.
I don't think we were supposed to laugh, by the way, when that Japanese policeman got hit in the head with that giant ice ball. But I did.
Anyway.
I did. Couldn't stop laughing. That made me laugh.
Go ahead. My favorite character in the movie was the reporter who's all over the street and ends up getting taken out by
Jimmy.
A billboard.
Guy. People in L.A.
Tommy.
Are so...
Tommy?
Yeah, was it Tommy, not Jimmy? Oh, you're right. You're right. Yep.
Tommy. They're so funny. They're like... they're the... Oh, man. You know what I do like about this movie, though? Compared to, like, 2012? I was going to go off on this whole rant of how much I hated it, but I thought, you know what? I need to at least give it some love.
Yeah, I love it.
All right. So, a little bit of love for the movie. Unlike 2012 is just like a let's go, and everything's moving so fast. This was back in 2004, and I think I appreciated the fact that he gave us a little bit of pause from time to time.
There was like, breathing room, sure.
There was breathing, exactly, because we would have there was like the floor waxer in the newscaster building, and he was waxing the floor, and they went through a good minute long scene of him the lights turning off on him. And then seeing the light on the other side of the door, but, representing the fact that the part of the building was gone.
Well, there was also time in the library or time, you know. Right.
A lot of that needed to hit the cutting room floor, Brian. I like the whole thing with the Gutenberg Bible. Yeah, it was too long.
Right.
It was too slow. The thing with the Gutenberg Bible, you're like, oh, that Bible's going to do something later. No, they were just.
In a way,
that struck me as a chick in the bucket, or at least a chick in the bucket that Stephen King would not have allowed on set, because he would have made that guy crazy and start rallying people behind him and then killing somebody for some reason or whatever.
The librarian lady was one, but the problem with chick in the bucket in a movie like this is that everyone's dying. So you just have to assume that anybody who went off camera went and froze to death.
You know? To me, Bilbo's the biggest chick in the bucket, because you establish him, this you know, celebrated actor Ian Holm, you've got this guy in your movie, you have opportunities with him. He literally sat there, pointed out that too many sensors were going down at once, and then gave up the ghost and said, "That's it, boys, we're out." And that's a weird, small, dumb role for a guy who didn't really have anything to do with anything. He didn't do anything. Not really.
He made us feel emotional for, you know, the Europe
for
area.
What?
For the Europe area. So we kind of we knew what was going on over there. We're like, okay,
he's our good over there contingent. Too.
All right, fine.
I just can't get enough of that trope. The Englishman on safari and the big one's coming and they're just like, all right, chaps.
Right.
This is it then.
Chaps. Yep. Chaps is the great word for it. That's the chap trope.
Safari hat.
Love that trope.
Chap trope.
Let's drink our fresh scotch and...
So in the FAQ of the IMDb, or the frequently asked questions on there, my favorite one by far, I put this on Twitter earlier, is this. Question. Did Tommy the reporter die? Yes,
he took a.
We don't know. We don't know for a fact. I mean, there's a lot of. I mean, if you got hit by a sign,
that billboard right into Mexico.
There's a lot of surface area. The way it hit him, the wind could have picked him up just right.
All right, sign. Don't stop going until we get to Tijuana. See. There's no way Tommy survived that. There's not a chance. That was too big.
Was that an Evangeline billboard? By the way, like I know those are. All over LA, or at least they used to be all over LA. That was a big trope of this
Evangeline. What does that mean?
Evangeline, this stripper woman. They use these billboards all over the place. Let me see if I can pull up a logo.
Oh, is it like using the Wilhelm Scream kind of thing, where if you're going to have a billboard in your movie and you're in LA, it's this thing?
If you're going to get smacked by a billboard in your movie.
Well, I mean, I can see that, you know, like if it's some running gag.
Oh, Angeline. I'm sorry, not Evangeline.
She
came to prominence in 1980. Okay, never mind. Maybe a little bit older. 1984, after a number of billboards promoting herself started appearing all over Los Angeles.
Oh, interesting.
I'm pretty sure it was. Let me send you guys a link. And for those of you in the listening audience, it's Angeline, spelled with a Y-N-E.
So Wayne, you're positing though that this is that when they're going to involve a billboard destruction or something in a film?
Yes, this is like
a lot like it. It really looks like an Angeline billboard.
Okay,
yes.
So it is like the Wilhelm Scream. Same idea,
kind of, except it's not just in movies. It's like this was a real thing all over L.A.
Mm. Right, right.
But not now, right? Like, you couldn't go to L.A. now and see these hanging everywhere, or could you?
You might find one.
It seems like a weird...
I was just doing a President Obama. You might find one.
It's more like it reminds me of Tina on Bob's Burgers. Anyway.
Here we go. Yep, it does appear in The Day After Tomorrow.
In TV shows, Moonlighting, The Simpsons, Futurama, BoJack Horseman.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
That's an animated thing
on Netflix. Recent, so there you go.
I don't like when planes are involved. As soon as you see some people on a plane, I just go, damn it. Do you have to do that? Just why? Why?
Does it bother you? Well, it makes it all the more fun for anybody who's watching this for their in-flight movie.
Mm. Hey, did you recognize that actress, by the way, who's holding hands with her on the plane? That's that girl from that show on Showtime that's pretty good.
Wow, that's pretty descriptive.
Oh, crap. It's got Lundergaard in it. You knew who I mean. Yeah, but we were just talking about it. Shameless. She's the main. Well, they're all kind. It's kind of an ensemble cast, but she's one of the main characters. She's one of the younger daughters or whatever. The one that was in prison for a while for the drug.
Emma Rossum.
Yeah, Rossum. Is it or something?
Emma Rossum.
Yeah, she's really good on that show. She's very bad in this movie. I think she's terrible in this.
I am never once convinced in this movie that that's her voice.
Me neither. It's overdubbed the whole time.
The whole movie.
I think toward the end when she's sick, I'm kind of thinking it's her. But the rest of the time. totally
with
not
the
her.
With the trope cough. Yes, I love the trope cough.
Yeah, right.
How do you know someone has a leg infection? Right. They start coughing.
He was my favorite Russian defected dancer in the 80s was Tropkov. He was fantastic. Like
I love how that boat just showed up on time, too. It was like, hey, you need some antibiotics? Yeah, a giant boat for it.
Free delivery.
Got a whole Russian boat full of them that can't doesn't have any English on anything except for the word penicillin.
If you and I were given that boat, if all four of us were given that boat and told, find the antibiotics, it would take us a week.
Six months later.
Yeah.
It totally would.
It is so weird that high schoolers in movies can do anything.
Well, they're
nerds. I do get mad at how animals or wild animals are portrayed in movies because it annoys me.
You mean CGI wolves or actual animals?
Well, yeah, I know. But it's like, okay, a wild animal will chase you up to a point. But after a while, they're going to be like, screw this. That wasn't worth all that.
No, they don't turn into vampires. The way they were in this thing, I understand if an animal gets
a personal vendetta against you. Is like
that was a bit much.
I go running every morning out here in the Laguna Hills, and the coyotes are getting desperate. The drought has been going on for a while. They're hungry. The rabbit population's been going
down.
Randy
is starting to look pretty good.
I see coyotes at least three times a week out on the trail. They sprint away the instant they see me, and you can tell they're hungry. This idea that these zoo wolves, too, by the way, zoo wolves.
Do you go meep meep and run? Is that what you do?
Right. Meep 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 meep.
Just run up the hill.
I usually do that Jeff Foxworthy thing, actually, because there's that instant when they're looking at me and I'm running toward them and I'm looking at them and I go, get on out of here.
Nice. You might be a wolf.
Yep. That's and awesome.
Then he drops his Acme package and he runs off. I hate him.
Somebody else was saying this to me, that the wildlife in California is behaving funny right now with the drought as bad as it is. You're not the first one to say that. That's crazy.
I want to see that movie. Is it coming out soon?
It's kind of sad because the drought causes the ripple effect to go up the food chain. So like now that the smaller animals have suffered a lot, you're going to start to see fewer red-tailed hawks and fewer deer and so on. Yeah.
Bad. It's the end of times, as my mother-in-law would tell you. That's what she'd
just California.
Yeah.
End times.
End time. Out.
My mother-in-law is sure that it's the end times out there, but whatever.
Great.
She's always saying that. She's saying that about everything all the time.
I would love to see property values go down, so thank you.
Yeah, it's like, the toilet's plugged. End times. The freaking rain's on. It's end times. Doesn't matter.
It's over.
Yeah. No. So here's one. When a plane is in trouble, first thing to launch out of the bins is all that damn luggage. Here we go.
Oh, yeah.
First
those things are held together by like a piece of tissue paper.
Right. Yeah. That bothered me. Also, trope.
Oh, we got a trope. Hold on here.
Character trope.
Here we got two things for you. One is, I don't have it. Never mind.
Brian makes a point.
There you go. That's
and
one for you.
Makes a trope.
Wow.
Our hero is in the middle of a divorce or separation, is going to get back together with his significant other.
Oh, I hate that one.
Yes, and the divorce brings them back together.
Yeah, they did that in 2012 as well.
Mm-hmm.
Same
they
story.
They do it in everything ever. So right. Wasn't it the same thing in '94? There was something with the...
Yes. Was the president and vice president having trouble or something?
The president and his wife who was separated, weren't they... falling out or something
they were,
like
yeah, they
that.
They were falling out. They were having trouble. No. Was Will Smith having trouble?
No, he and his girlfriend were in a really good relationship.
Yeah, they were.
True, there's true. Something in that movie.
Yeah.
It might be the president.
It might be Randy Quaid and his plane.
It was Randy Quaid and his kids or something, wasn't it?
Okay, or right. His wife or something. There's always this. They have it every time.
Armageddon is a good one, though. Armageddon with the astronaut who's...
And the animal crackers and the...
No, not animal crackers. The guy whose wife is, you know, not letting him see their kid, and then...
Oh, yes, yes.
And she doesn't believe... I think it's Joan Cusack.
No, it
wasn't Buscemi. It's
the guy from the Postman who was the bad guy.
Oh, I'm thinking of Con Air when Buscemi went and saw that little kid.
That was
something totally different.
But it was Joan Cusack saying, "Oh, your husband, your father's not never been anything, and he's never done anything in his life, and it's about time you realize that." And then all of a sudden, he's on TV getting a hero's welcome because he saved the planet.
Yeah, saves everybody. And everything turns story. Everybody around until he gets home, and then you're like, "Oh yeah, you're still a slob, and I hate you."
That's right. Oh yeah, now I remember why. Yeah,
there's always
the world be damned.
Here's my favorite. there's always dogs in peril in Roland Emmerich movies. Every time there's a dog. And you got to save the dog. And this time it's a homeless guy.
Dog. Hey, you know what? Homeless dog, I guess he's not really homeless, is he? I guess that's not really a dog thing.
Homeless dog? No. I don't think so. Yeah. Homeless guy, what happened to him? I forgot how that turned out. Did he live?
He ate the dog. And it was happily ever
did
after.
Did we see him after the... Did we see him at the end getting picked up by the helicopter? He's with the group. Okay.
He's petting the dog and everything's good.
Everybody saw smiles. You know, Manhattan's this, you know, ice ball. Oh, there's a helicopter. Oh, it's all... Everything's so
actually,
good.
Actually, okay. Nice point, Brian. And I would like to bring this up now. This is a good point as any to bring this up.
Okay.
This movie, as much as I enjoy it and I like it the most out of all their movies, like I've said before... Way too easily wrapped up there at the end. Way too many happy faces.
Yeah.
Nice way too easy to go, oh, it was just a storm. This will all pass. No.
Run this down. All right.
Like Jake Gyllenhaal on a Russian ship.
That's right.
They demonstrate that everything in Europe except Spain and Portugal, because that's where Africa starts, is gone. Everything in the United States above a certain point is gone. The only people who survive held out in a New York library. Like, it is awful. A substantial part of the world's population has just been killed, and all of the planet's fertile farmland is gone.
Yeah.
Like, and we're at the end going, ah, but at least we now all believe in global climate change.
Well, we have the poppy seeds of Colombia. They look relatively unchanged. You've got, you're totally right. Like, it was way too easy, way too, oh, I've never seen the sky so clear and all this BS. How are you astronauts even getting home? Enjoy your tang, what's left of it.
Right.
Because you're done, dude.
You got no place to land.
No. And they said that Asia and China and Europe and everybody's destroyed. So... there is no coming up there to refuel you guys. You're done. Like, they were way too happy for what that meant for them.
They were basically saying everything that was, you know, the third world, which was everything below except for Australia. Whatever happened to them, who knows?
Yeah, they didn't even notice this. They're like, do you guys notice it maybe dropped in temperature like a degree?
Like, no, with my jacket.
I've got to turn up my barbecue a little bit.
But you know what? I would actually have been interested in seeing like a follow-up TV series where we dealt with all these Americans migrating over into Mexico. I thought that was the most interesting aftermath story would be
super interesting for sure. No one ever does that. I mean, they try to, like, Jericho was kind of trying to do that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other shows that, well, I guess, I mean, in a way Walking Dead does, but that relies more on the undead trope than it does anything else. It's kind of a fantasy, but you never see anything where they're like, oh, what's the HBO one? The Leftovers. That does.
Oh, yeah, that kind of deals with the aftermath of but it's more of the aftermath of a mystery than a big disaster.
And if you had to guess, Brian Ibbett, since you've seen that show.
Yes.
Yes. Just guess, because this is Lindelof. This is, you know, this is Lost People.
Sure.
Do you think they're going to, like, do you think it goes supernatural at some point? That that's what the big event was, and it's not just... a thing that's
they kind of have to go supernatural because the body's disappeared. It's not like everybody just died from some sort of weird disease. The body's
Let me rephrase. Do you think they will ever try to explain it
without trying to give anything away? Which I've already watched the first season as well. And,
well, you don't have to give anything away. But I guess what I'm saying is, do you think that they'll ever try to explain it like the way some shows feel like they're forced to, like Lost and others, or do they go the route of, say, The Walking Dead is a good example. The comics true in this way as well, where it's you never find out what happened.
Right.
It's all about what you do.
The life you have to accept because this is what's happened after, and you've just got to move on, as opposed to let's find all the answers. I think the show The Leftovers does that really well because all this stuff takes place 2 or 3 years after the disappearance, the event. Right. So you're not dealing with the, wow, why is this happening? And why, you know, what happened? You're dealing with, well, this is, you know, I still think about my family, but I've got to go back to being a police officer. I've got to go back to taking the kids to school. Everything has to go back to normal, which I think is a big difference. I think at some point, they will have to go back and explain or give some sort of explanation as to what happened, just because.
I don't think they will. I think one of the things I love about this show is they haven't tried to explain it, because that's one of the things I felt like with Lost. It was like, it was good for a few years and then it started getting on my nerves, because it was like, okay, you keep promising me you're going to explain it and you're still not doing it. Whereas I think The Leftovers is kind of going, you know what? Who knows what happened?
It's just, so the difference between the two is neither one really explained what happened, but at least this one's not promising.
It's not promising squat. So don't promise nothing. I'm cool.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is I would have appreciated people being reunited is a thing you can do and get away with, or some grins on some faces for some reasons. But to just say, the sun is out, the storm has passed, let's rebuild our lives. I mean, and the U.S. government acting like it has any power now that your entire nation is a popsicle. Exactly. I was upset about that.
President.
I guess I walked away going, why not show them?
We just signed a thing saying that we like Mexico. Here you go.
Here you go, guys. I mean, why not just show that it looks like crap, is crap, and is going to be super hard to deal with? Why not show me that?
It really felt like Roland Emmerich wanted to make a statement with Spain and Portugal and Mexico. Specifically, these three places all being shown as, doing all right, making it through this thing. Yeah. Like there, it was like what are you going to do now, first world people? You know,
mm-hmm. Maybe you brought this on yourself. Snorting South American.
You were the
drugs.
Ones doing all the. You were the ones polluting all the environment. You're the ones who deserved it. Ha ha ha.
Yeah. Yes. It hit you only.
That is exactly the laugh he would have used. All right. Another thing these movies never do, they never tell you how to, or if anyone ever has to take a crap or pee anywhere, that never happens. And that's all I can think of is the sanitary conditions of a city overrun with too much water and then ice. It'd be ridiculous. Nobody's got any food. Everyone's taking a crap in the middle of the library in the adult fiction section or something.
Well, yeah, we talked a little bit about this in We Just Want the Money. Is that all that water is washing up sewage and
dead bodies?
Dead bodies and
how well does dry poop burn? I'm just curious. I mean, could you like put a pile over here of poop?
Well, they do it with cow.
Let's try it.
Like cow or horse crap. They do that in westerns and stuff.
Right.
I assume that's a thing you can do. I don't think you rub two dry turds together.
Hold on.
I didn't say start a fire. I just said continue.
Trying to get
fire,
it to light. Hold on.
You're trying to. Why do you have a dry turd in your house?
He's always got one at the ready, right?
Yeah, you're, always got one at the
be
ready.
Prepared.
Just for you.
He was he was a Boy Scout. He was an Eagle Scout, in
be
fact.
Prepared. Mm-hmm.
He knows.
Can I throw out one more quick trope?
Of course. Hold on.
It's an easy one. American businessmen are a-holes.
Mm-hmm. That guy in the bus.
Yeah, the three guys who walk in, what a stupid meeting. What's
$200? Let me get on your bus and die here with you.
Yeah, this bus is not a service. There's $200. We're a-holes, and we're the stereotypical a-holes. And oh, my God, a big way we're all going to die.
I hate those guys. I hate them. You know who they are. They're the, hey, booby, that guy from freaking, hate him.
Yes.
I was literally yelling at the screen during that scene because that cop kept going, I don't understand what you're saying. The lady who was locked in the cab and couldn't
cops
get out of the cab.
Cops are useless.
Why do you need to understand what she's saying? It doesn't matter what she's saying. She's trapped in the car. That's
my job is to protect and serve.
I don't understand what you're saying. I'm saying I'm trapped in the car, idiot.
No way you're going to know to cover your eyes when I start gesturing like I'm going to bash this window in with a hammer. Unless we have an interpreter.
And by the way, that's the same cop that leads a bunch of people to their deaths out of the safety of the library. Same cop. I'm telling you, man. That trope,
kid. We got it.
Yeah.
That trope of useless police, man. It's in every movie.
It's pretty bad.
He's like a parent in a John Hughes film.
So what I'm going to do before we do clips is I'm going to give you some great trivia rapid fire style. All right. So here's some trivia about this film. In 2008, Yahoo Movies listed the film as one of the top 10 scientifically inaccurate movies of all time.
Yeah.
Number two, there was doubts among the production team of having a major disaster hit New York, especially after 9/11. This is only, 3 years later they were filming it. That sensitivity did not appear to be shared by New Yorkers themselves when it played in the Big Apple. Audiences were reported as to have been whooping, meaning, whoop.
Mm-hmm.
In delight when the city gets hit by an enormous tidal wave. South
That's
Park.
Hilarious.
Yeah, it's pretty good. South Park creators Matt Stone and Trey Parker managed to get their hands on a copy of the film script during its pre-production. They had planned to secretly shoot the same movie, scene for scene, with puppets instead of actors, word for word, and release it on the same day. They abandoned these plans after their lawyers convinced them that such a film would never get released. I would have killed to see this.
I would have paid $100 to see that.
Yep.
I guess this was when they had were, owning a puppet company because they were making Team America or something.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
Yep. Here's a good one. This is an interesting place in history. The opening weekend gross for this film, along with second weekend gross of Shrek, represented the most money ever earned in a single weekend in a movie history at that point. this has since been passed, but it's still the fifth highest grossing weekend of all time, has been the biggest opening weekend gross for a movie that did not reach number one at the U.S. box office. It was never more than number two, yet it still had, it was still part of the biggest opening weekend. Mm. The highest grossing film to be made in Canada is the third thing it can count.
This movie really was number two.
Yeah, yeah. It was a big number two, right? The U.S. Army loaned several UH-60 Black Hawk helicopters for the rescue scene.
And then immediately regretted it.
Well, not the freezing scene, the other one. But this prompted Canadian authorities, I love this, to reassure the people of Montreal that they were not being invaded by the United States of America. So don't worry. This isn't like Red Dawn. Everybody relax.
They're just
relax.
Making another stupid movie.
Sorry,
don't
guys.
Worry.
Sorry. It's not. They're not really invading. Sorry about it. Sorry.
So I want to know, though, what movie surpasses this, if any? Can anyone think of a movie that surpasses this in terms of thinly veiled political statement?
Oh,
It happens pretty good. That's a good question, though.
That's really common.
Like there's usually at least a couple of times a year, there's always some big blockbuster movie that's based on some kind of
right.
some agenda.
Freak out.
It's got some sort of hick president, you right. know,
whatever.
Taking a stab at W. Yeah.
But, you know, I say yeah, freak out, but I don't want anybody to think that I don't believe in global warming because, yeah. We're not even going to discuss that. This is film sack, not serious,
global,
serious
global sack. No.
Right.
Well, let me give you some examples. What was the Steven Seagal movie? On Deadly Ground.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the one where he's the Indian. No, it's Eskimo, isn't it? Eskimo.
Last year, the movie Elysium was about healthcare.
Oh, right.
Right.
I forgot about that.
God.
You're right, though.
How about Idiocracy?
Idiocracy is about dumb people.
Crash was about racism. Right, right.
Which one? The one where they had sex when the cars crashed, or the other one?
The other one.
Okay.
That's the Terrence Howard one.
Okay. That's the one. Yeah. The Terrence Howard award winning one, not the weird freaking nobody gave
that's
it an award
David
one.
David Lynch one. Okay. Is that David Lynch?
No. It was, who's the guy that made. Oh, no. It's Soderbergh, isn't it? Or am I thinking of something else? Who made Crash?
No, you're right. I think it was Soderbergh. Soderbergh was the good one.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Crash.
Yes, that's the one I'm talking about. We already mentioned The Happening.
James Spader, 1996. James Spader, Holly Hunter, directed by Cronenberg, is who I'm thinking of. David Cronenberg.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. After getting into a serious car accident and a TV director discovers the underground subculture of scarred omnisexual car crash victims who use car accidents as the raw sexual energy they produce to try to rejuvenate their sex lives.
You know,
coming to FilmSec as soon as it's streaming.
Every movie by Oliver Stone does this, right?
Right.
Hey, Avatar, which
no,
is
that's
Avatar.
Not thinly veiled.
Avatar,
right? Oh, Avatar, total environmental Native American. Two. Yeah. For sure.
Coming out.
Yeah. I'm not even opposed to these things. I just think they are there, and we should accept that they're there, and people shouldn't see them necessarily as well. I guess it's all propaganda, but. You know, what's the difference between this and that SEAL Team 6 movie that was pretty good?
I'm just saying this was egregious, particularly.
Like, yeah. Right. It's like the difference between, you know, admitting, sure, there's global warming versus have you seen Fox News?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's like that. It's like, sure, we can all have a rational discussion about it or you can compare it to Fox News. This is kind of like the Fox News movie for global warming, I think. It's just, you know, it's off the chain crazy of what might happen.
Well, yeah, except the whatever the opposite of Fox News is. But yeah.
Right. MSNBC.
Sure.
Thinks,
sure.
Yeah.
But I guess this is just it. I mean, this is what happens. Art imitates people's ideas. They get these ideas and they want to push agendas, and that's just the way it is. It's never really bothered me. Still doesn't. But right. This one's just real preachy and obvious about it. That's, I guess, what I would agree with is like, you know, him getting up in front of everybody and basically giving a speech that was written to hit all the hot points of the issue.
Right.
That's not a script. That's you pushing your agenda. I mean, it is. For good or for bad. Yeah.
Do you know there's a new ID4 coming out?
I don't.
In 2016, they've already got part one and part two.
Yeah. Who's in? Who is Will Smith back in?
Forever. No, what's his name is definitely signed on. The president.
Great.
Bill Pullman. Bill Pullman is definitely, yeah. But didn't he die? I don't remember.
No.
Okay.
No.
No, he survived.
No,
his wife died.
Data died. So did his wife died.
Crazy, right. Crazy Quaid died.
Yeah, Crazy Quaid went up the
Well, we didn't actually see him die, so we, you know, it's kind of one of those.
I hope he comes back as a hybrid.
And my guess is he's signing on too.
I wanted to be a hybrid alien that comes back like all like infested Terran looking with like stuff right. hanging off of him and everything. That'd be awesome.
They've assimilated Randy Quaid's DNA yes. and they all come back as Randy Quaid.
Like
That'd
an army
awesome.
Of Randy half Randy Quaid cyborgs.
Independence Quaid.
Some, right. for some now suddenly very interested in that sequel. Yeah.
Well, no, but I did hear that they're doing a Labyrinth sequel.
Are they really
yes,
doing that?
Yes,
is that
yes.
real?
They've talked about that forever.
Hold
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
So anybody like Connolly and Bowie and all that?
Not I would
that,
love Bowie
only,
to come back.
The only people who from the first one are involved are the Jim Henson Company.
Oh, wow. Right, right. Which is barely so, Jim Henson.
And Toby Frau will be back. Yeah, right.
Toby who?
The baby?
Yeah, the baby.
Babe.
Proud, yeah.
Great. You know who I would take? I'll tell you who I'd get excited about in this remake. Not remake. I guess it's a sequel, right? But this
sequel,
is
yeah.
just bear with me. This is the kid I would want back.
What kind of a deal?
I want that guy back.
What kind
you
of
remind
a deal?
Me of the babe.
The babe?
You know what just
the
occurred to me?
The babe with the power.
We've been talking about Roland Emmerich for an hour. Yeah, and it what, just yeah. occurred to me that in the Twinsies films last year about the White House, I liked his a lot. I really liked White House Down.
White House Down.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was, I don't know which one I liked more. I don't remember which one was which. Was it Olympus Has Fallen is the one with
that
300
Freeman?
Guy.
Morgan Freeman.
And yeah. 300 Man, right?
Yeah. And White House Down had Channing Tatum and Jamie Foxx.
Oh, right, that's right. And that was the better one?
I prefer the White House Down one.
I'm saying I really enjoyed it. I'm not saying it's good. I just really enjoyed it, and right. I forgot that it was a Roland Emmerich film. I really
I mean,
did.
There's like 20 minutes of Channing Tatum and Jimmy Fox and like this dance off. It's awesome.
Wait, no, hold on. Isn't Channing
That's
Tatum?
That's the one I've seen. Is
he's
one
the
are,
he's the president though. Fox
no,
is.
Jimmy Fox is the
Jamie
president.
Fox is the Barack yeah. Obama.
And right. Aaron Eckhart is the president in the other one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
That's what I've seen. Because Aaron Eckhart's wife dies from the Secret Service agent that's Gerard Butler.
Yes.
Ooh, spoiler alert.
No, it happens yes. in the first minute.
Yeah, it's not okay. a spoiler.
And it's been more than 2 weeks.
Yeah. People who like White House Down also like Olympus Has Fallen because they can't get enough.
Thank you, Vince Gilligan. Just want to call that out. What a special thing that is you do.
Sure.
All right, let's play some damn clips. We got a few here, and none of them are this.
What kind of a deal?
There are many other new ones. And they go like this. Let's start with Senators Are Always Dicks, and here's proof.
Professor Hall.
Vice President is who I meant, not senators. Here you go.
Hall.
Our economy is every bit as fragile as the environment. Perhaps you should keep that in mind before making sensationalist claims.
Yeah. Because if I did something today, it would totally fix it 2 weeks from now. So,
right.
Thanks. That's the thing is, they presented it as if it's something you could fix. No, that shelf was going to fall off, and the freaking swirly dirly was going to happen. There's nothing right. you could do about it. Yeah, that irritates me. All right, here's Bilbo. Bilbo and the European station there.
Well, you know what these scientific gatherings are? All dancing girls, wine, and parties.
Yeah,
all dancing girls.
Yeah. The important things.
Hello.
I just saw that Sam
got an F in calculus.
Okay, grades and spraying your plants. Those are the two important things.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I've seen so many depictions of people spraying plants. I've never sprayed plants. I've always just poured water into the dirt.
Well, people do it, but he has so many plants. I mean, he's not a climatologist. He's a freaking
horticulturist.
Paleo, yeah, not right.
Horticulturist.
No, I don't. It's a good question. I've never actually seen anyone actually do that. I've only seen it depicted in film or TV.
I've only seen it on commercials.
People do it. I've never done it, but I know people do it.
But what's the point? Just moistening
it? At my office does it. Well, you can put plant food in there. If you want to kill bugs, I mean, you can make a little concoction of water junk and just.
Probably yeah. keeps the soil from getting soggy or right. Who knows?
Can you imagine what if the world gets flipped around and plants take control and they decide to start watering us with spray bottles? That would just totally suck.
How you like it? Oh. Squirt.
How you How like you it? Like, oh. I'm still thirsty.
I think I found an empty spray bottle.
Imagine trying to survive by drinking water that was on your skin.
Oh, right, geez, sprayed
really?
On you.
Oh, hey, imagine trying to pee on a tree and drinking it. Imagine that.
I know,
these movies just make me want to watch Waterworld.
Waterworld. Yeah. Everything makes you want to watch Waterworld.
Everything does. Someone said, hey, have you seen, are you watching this final season of Anarchy, Sons of Anarchy? I'm like, with Kim Coates, who wants to know if you know about paper. Is that what you're telling me? Like, it's all, everything's connected.
Right. My Kevin Costner film that I can watch anytime that sucks really, really bad is The Postman.
How about Postman?
Yeah. I don't mind watching that one. It's fine. It's terrible, but it's fine.
I'll watch Tin Cup anytime it comes on HBO.
Oh, what? Seriously.
I like King Tin Cup a lot, like actually. That.
Totally.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with Tin Cup. Lay it up, man. Lay it up.
Yeah.
No, I'm going for it. Lay it up.
I can also watch The Untouchables pretty much anytime. I can watch... what's another good Costner?
John Dunbar.
I like that one. You know.
I can turn it on. I can't sit and watch it. I mean, I can have it on in the background, and then every once in a while, I go, she's going to say the line, John Dunbar, and then I laugh, and then I turn it off.
Mm. Well, by the way, we watched that with the kids last night on Blu-ray. We got a copy of what's it called? The Rocketeer.
I didn't know they put that on Blu-ray yet.
You know, that holds up pretty good. And it looked really good, like the Blu-ray up. Tech and everything looked really nice. Didn't feel like a movie made in 1991, which is now a long time ago, but it was really fun. Like, I had a really good time with it. It was very strange though, because like Terry O'Quinn is playing who's the Spruce Goose guy? I always forget his name. Howard Hughes.
Okay,
which is weird to see Locke doing that with like a full head of hair and a mustache. Very strange. I liked it. I like Alan Arkin is the crazy old scientist guy.
His buddy.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Yeah. It totally holds up.
It's a fun movie because it takes place in a completely different era. So you don't feel like it's any more dated than it was when it came out.
Margot Martindale's in there.
Really?
Yeah. She's the waitress at that weird dog shaped restaurant that they're always in.
Got some good hooch in a mason jar.
I tell you what, don't drink it though while you're talking to her. Bad news.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that's for all you Justified fans out there. That's what we just did. Okay, here's here's some father son time with Jake Gyllenhaal. Gyllenhaal or Gyllenhaal? How do we say
Gyllenhaal?
Is it Gyllenhaal? Whatever.
I thought it was Gyllen with a.
I thought it was Gyllenhaal.
Did you guys see that show where it's as if they're it's almost like found footage? They're filming the life of him as a cop and his partner.
Oh, I love that show. That was a good movie.
I really liked it a lot. I think so.
Was that after watching Night Watch or After Watch?
Overwatch, Monkey Watch, Apple Watch. I don't remember. All right, here you go. Father and son time. Here you go.
Well, that's ridiculous. How can he fail you for being smarter than he is?
That's what I said.
But that was you did that on a microphone in a different room.
That was terrible. And you know what? It was end of watch. And also, I just want to say, if your kid tells you that he got failed for not showing his work, that's because he told him to do his work. And he's got to follow directions.
Yeah.
Show your work.
Just because you're smart and you do it in your head doesn't mean you shouldn't do what the teacher tells you to do.
Right.
I mean, if you want a good grade, I'm saying. May not be right on an ethical or on a fundamental philosophical level, but on a academic, you need your grade level. Do what he says.
That's what I tell my kids all the time. I'm like, hey, look, he's the gatekeeper. He has the keys that you want. If you want the keys, you got to do what he tells you to do. Otherwise,
right. And then once you've got your diploma, then you go back and you give him a piece of your mind.
Yeah. Yeah, do that.
And you get a whole acting career out of it.
Right. Tommy is obvious is the name of this next clip. I don't remember why I said this, but Tommy is obvious.
Tommy?
If you look over there behind me, that's a tornado.
If you look over there behind me.
If you look in front of me, there's a billboard.
So I absolutely love that actor.
Yeah.
He plays little bit roles in a bunch of things.
He's always a dick, right?
No, he's usually a pretty smiley face kind of guy.
Mm. Right, but he's like the disingenuous smiley face guy there, right? The guy that you kind of go, he's full of crap.
Well, in this one, I felt like he was serious about his weather. It seemed like he knew what he was doing.
Right.
You know, he was willing to be out there in the middle of it and take it for the team.
Tim Bagley.
Yeah, and I don't know why, the instant I saw him, I'm like, oh, this is going to be the best part of the movie. And for me, it was the best part of the movie.
And you were right, it was the best.
Wow. Hold on a second.
I'm still trying to find him. Tim Bagley. He is way down there.
Yeah.
It says billboard guy.
Skype.
Yeah.
There he is.
Trying to see, like, looking at his pictures, what we, you know, we can always see, like, a list of his movies, but he's a background character. Well, maybe not a background character, but is usually not front and center.
Yeah.
So you got to look at his pictures to see, oh, he was the guy in the captain's hat when they were dancing in the...
He's the guy that got hit by the Bill Burr.
Here we go. How all the VP conversations go, like this one.
Mr. Vice President, if we don't act now, it's going to be too late.
Oh, every time. And he just doesn't care. He just turns around and walks away.
Right.
Oh, Dennis Quaid, you're barking up the wrong tree, buddy.
Yeah, Dick Cheney ain't going to change his mind.
Last of the Snowheekins, I wrote here. let's find out why I wrote that. Here we go.
I will come for you. Do you understand me? I will come for you.
Dude, I will come for you no matter what occurs. That's why I called it that.
Because in a world with SEAL commandos, a scientist is your badass.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And they repeat things a lot, by the way.
Yeah.
Did you hear him say that twice? Now listen to this one.
This is not the same. Jack, this is not the same.
Right. They do that a lot.
He's got to convince you and himself.
The movie did that a lot. I captured them not even meaning to, but they just all repeat themselves. All right, here's this says I have to what?
I have to do this.
Oh, I just like how he says it.
I have to do this.
Why'd you park your car there?
I have to do this.
Oh, why'd you punch your mother?
I have to do this.
All right, great. Did you find your earring? Is it in your poop?
I have to do this.
All right, great. Here's
set that poop on fire.
I have to do this.
All right, here's the nerd kid.
Sir, I am president of the electronics club, the math club, and the chess club. Now, if there's a bigger nerd in here, please point him out.
I don't understand how any of those things made him a better
point in my greeting.
Yeah,
it was
intro. Yeah.
So weird.
I like Star Trek. I have a pocket protector. Mm-hmm.
I've seen Revenge of the Nerds.
Well, yeah, and I'm the trope of the one black kid who's also the nerd, and I kind of dig it, but it gave me Revenge of the Nerds flashbacks.
Sure, why not?
I kept thinking, what was that character's name in Revenge of the Nerds?
They had a black guy in there, right?
Yeah, the one guy, Latrell, right?
Latrell.
Oh my gosh.
The multi-purpose character of homosexual and black guy.
Like they're announcing him when he's about to throw the spear, the javelin. Lamont Luttrell. And they've made a special javelin that bounces with him when he's running.
All right. All right. Look at this. That's two episodes in a row with all these nerd references. We had what's his name last week? And
nerds.
Yeah.
Okay. Ogre.
All right. Here's more repeating.
Look. Just look for a second.
All right. Okay.
Jeez, see where he gets it from? Yeah.
He gets it from his dad, yeah. All right, now I found some. I like to do this. I like to unearth old audio from our lives. And I found this old, tiny piece of audio that may have just gone under the radar otherwise had I not found it. But I feel like I've really done the human species a real service with this. This is Brian Ibbett on his prom date or prom night.
Jeez.
With his prom date. And this is 8 p.m. that night. Brian Ibbett is heard to say this.
We're not going to last very long on M&Ms and potato chips.
There you go.
It's true. It's really, really true.
I mean, I know you're a cheap date, but come on.
I go for what I like.
All right, good.
But what is the? Why are they planning to last very long anyway? Like, if you're not gonna just have enough water to drink for a few days, it doesn't matter.
Just gotta melt down some of that sewer water that's now snow in the front of the building there. That's all I could think of was, oh, look at all this snow. You guys can drink forever. And then I thought, no, that's like ocean and pee. You can't drink that. So don't drink that. All right, here is
you're
the final file. Preachy sandwich, last piece of bread. What?
Preachy sandwich.
Oh, I know what I'm saying. This movie is a preachy sandwich. That's what it is. You have a preachy piece of bread on the top.
Final piece of bread for the preachy sandwich.
Yep, and then you have a disaster in the middle, and then you have a final piece of preachy bread on the bottom. So here's that final piece, because we played the intro. That was very preachy. Now here's the end. With the
These past few weeks have left us all with a profound sense of humility in the face of nature's destructive power. For years, we operated under the belief that we could continue consuming our planet's natural resources without consequence.
I invented the internet. Man, bear, pig. All right. So there's that. Let's get now to where we do another thing, which is something that we like to call the checklist. The Film Sack checklist for Day After Tomorrow goes like this. Last second, shut the door to save the library from getting destroyed. Mm-hmm. Check.
Mm-hmm. That'll save the whole library, right?
Yeah, did it twice with snow and then water. Mm-hmm. Fugitive wife, check. Everyone remember his wife is from Fugitive? Yeah.
Seal Award.
She lasted longer in this than she did in that. I mean, living in the show.
Well,
I mean.
Yeah, because there wasn't a one-armed man in this movie.
That's right. That's right. And then finally, Black Hawk popsicles? Check. All right, moving on down to the Trek stuff. Star Trek connections from Daryl, who sends us these. Mark Thompson played the news reporter, or one of them. He, on TNG, played the mutated Anthony Breville in the episode Identity Crisis, which I think is the one where he exploded at the end. Isn't that the deal? No. I think so.
Oh, at the very end, like that that really gruesome scene.
Yeah, that one that shocked me. Yeah. Still to this day is like, whoa, Trek, what are you doing there? Mm-hmm. Jack Loeffler, he played Jeff Baflin. May as well just gave him the same name.
You could have flip-flopped those names, and I'd still believe you.
He was in Star Trek. STID? It sounds like a sex
into
disease.
Into Darkness.
Into Darkness. Got it. STID.
I need to take some penicillin. I've got STID.
Played the Royal Children's Hospital doctor in J.J. Abrams' sequel. And then Frank Fontaine, who was Caddy Cooper, played in DS9, played 24th Century Human Caddy Hologram Cooper. In DS9, created as part of a program. It was supposed to be 1962 Las Vegas on Earth. I remember that guy in there. Aaron Lusting played Bernie on Voyager. He played a doctor in the episode Ex Post Facto. And in Enterprise played Guri in the episode Catwalk. That's quite the Trek legacy going on there. For the soundtrack, I'd give it a PG for pretty good. I quite liked it. I thought it was fun.
When it was used, it was really good.
Mm-hmm. Intro credits, very nice. I thought that was real nice. Yeah.
Well
very
done.
Nice. The intro credit.
Yeah.
And then it was like there were whole stretches where you're like, where's the scoring? There's no scoring. Why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is weird.
So we could hear the crackling of the ice.
I guess so.
Yeah, something like that.
The crackling of the ice. All right. Time for you guys to sum this thing up in 140 characters or less each. Let's start with Randy for the Twitter post.
The day after tomorrow, like Michael Moore tried to make a Michael Bay film after receiving a lobotomy in Cuba. Hashtag note to self. Hashtag do not argue politics on Twitter.
Nice. No kidding. Good job. Oh, don't bring up Gamergate, whatever you do. Brian Dunaway, your turn.
Ah, the day after tomorrow, like watching Twister with the Weather Channel turned on and picture in picture. It's just too much.
Mm.
Remember picture in picture? You guys remember that? Mm-hmm. Picture in picture?
PIP. Yeah. PIP.
Yeah.
PIP
still
for sure.
Still have that on my new TV.
My dad called it PIP. He would say,
PIP, Johnson.
He'd say, let's try to see if we can get that PIP to work. I'm like, Dad, I think it stands for picture in picture. He says, well, it says PIP.
Football on the PIP.
Yeah, PIP. You'd have a game on the little PIP and then or the little tiny
the
picture.
Little PIP.
And then Gladys Knight and her other PIPs on the big screen. All right. Then finally, Brian Ebert.
The day after tomorrow, scientists from yesterday deal with the disaster from tomorrow with acting from 20 years ago. And 2 hours from now, you'll be wanting to watch another movie.
Nice. You're a time lord. That was great. This just handed to me. The alternate titles for today's film. Let's see. Our movie president stares blankly into space like all good movie presidents. By the way, that was dude from, oh, crap. Riptide.
The president?
Yeah, he's the Riptide guy with the mustache. I can't think of his name all of a sudden. I'm looking at it here.
Like the TV
Perry King. Yeah, that's Perry King.
Is that Perry King? Yep. No way, get out of here.
Yep, that's totally Perry King. Perry King.
You know, they should have had Gary Berghoff come in and say, the president's convoy left the White House. They didn't make it. There were no survivors.
They went down at 2 o'clock. There were no survivors. Then walk off while everyone is letting people die on the operating table because they can't do anything. Exactly. Oh, I hated that scene. Anyway, let's see. What's our next one here? Oh, we got one more. Let's see. I lost it. Hold on. Oh, what did Bilbo do for this movie again? Is the other title. All right. Emails. We got emails. One from Ole Morton who wrote in and says, just saw Sharknado with you guys and I had a fracking blast, he says. It's the most fun I've had with a live sack to date and I've seen this piece of crap before. Never noticed the nondescript brands before or thought of the idea that something alien was behind the less than logical weather. Thanks, Dunaway, says.
No.
Anyway, looking forward to Sharknado 2, the sharkening old Morton. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we're going to do that one just because why not? Mm-hmm. It makes sense to do it. Also got one from O'Meal who wrote in and said, just saw Bloodsport again for the first time since I was 9 and it was a real hoot. I was almost freaked out when Scott was talking about the glue and the broken glass. I, too, was certain it was in this movie. I waited the entire film for that scene, but nope, wrong film. In the one about Sharknado, Randy mentioned that the film would have been 25 minutes without the slow motion. But I can't believe none of you took offense by this in Bloodsport. If you remove the flashback dance or scenes and play the slow motion scenes in regular tempo, the film's pretty much a trailer. Frank takes a shower, goes to Hong Kong, beats up a bunch of rascally, racistly portrayed guys. Rascally.
Rascally.
AKA Mr. Monkey Man, while old wise cop and Battlefield Earth dude eat squid. The end.
True story.
Awesome email, dude. Love that. Thanks for your emails. Filmsack@gmail.com is where you can send those in. We are going to watch which episode? We got to pick one. You know what? We're watching an episode of Star Trek, but we don't tell
discuss
them,
it right here on the live stream.
Next week, we're going to watch season 3, episode 24, Turnabout Intruder.
All right. Which one? Now give them a synopsis. What's in this?
So an actress you've never heard of named Sandra Smith appears as Dr. Janice Lester and dies or almost dies, gets an alien to switch her personality with Captain Kirk.
All right. So she and Kirk switch personalities?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Sounds good.
Did this end Star Trek? Did that just like totally end the whole franchise right there?
No.
Wasn't that the last one? What was the last one?
Was on the edge of the World of Edge of Tomorrow, wasn't it?
No, Turnabout Intruder is the very last episode.
The World on the Edge of Tomorrow. What am I thinking of? I'm thinking of Edge of Tomorrow.
City on the Edge of Forever.
I combined the two. It's got Tom Cruise in it and Captain Kirk.
The second to last was All Our Yesterdays.
Is this an action-y one, or is this a stand around and talk to Kirk a lot one?
Let's just put it this way. I saw a quick clip, and I know that Kirk literally did a black backflip off of the off the medical table. So,
all right, we're in
shirtless.
Yeah.
So it can't get much better.
We were originally going to do the Corbomite maneuver, which has Clint Howard in it. By the way, Clint Howard makes a very small cameo appearance in the Rocketeer. So just be watching for that next time you see it.
Oh, really?
It's just a real small role. I can't even believe he got in there, but whatever. We were going to see that one. It was slow.
It was slow.
So we decided, nope, not that. But this is a live commentary thing, kind of like we did with Sharknado. We're doing this for a couple of reasons. One, we love doing those and like sprinkling these in occasionally. It is streaming. But also, Brian Ibbett will be away on vacation, and we don't want to miss a show next week. So this is what we're doing instead. So if you like that, let us know. Give us your feedback. That'll be next week. And what's the episode again, Brian or Randy?
Turnabout Intruder.
Turnabout Intruder is the name. And then after that, we'll be back to our regularly scheduled stupidness. I think it's going to do it. Filmsack.com is the website. Email us, filmsack@gmail.com, on Twitter, @Filmsack. Leave us a review on iTunes or wherever podcasts are distributed. That's going to do it. For me, Scott Johnson. For him, Brian. For the other Brian. And for that guy, Randy.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time. Nothing? Oh.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Oh, gosh.